there is a group that does have an impact, and that's corporate travel managers. Because corporate travel managers have ESG programs, they have corporate level plans, they have culture that they're trying to create and maintain. So if a corporate travel manager says, I'm going to set a limit on what emissions are possible or permittable. I may say I want to set a budget for the marketing department. The marketing department gets, you know, X tons per year. And if they hit that limit, I'm going to stop further travel for that department. So putting those tools in the hands of travel managers, I think, is where the impact will go from a small number to a large number.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. I'm your host, Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simply Flying. Every Thursday, I have important conversations with top aviation executives, technology entrepreneurs, and policymakers helping aviation take climate action. Conversations that help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you are a frequent flyer or an airline executive, if you care about sustainability or simply love traveling, welcome aboard. This season of Sustainability in the Air is brought to you by Travelport. Travelport is a global technology firm that powers bookings for hundreds of thousands of travel suppliers worldwide. The company's travel retailing marketplace, Travelport Plus, helps retailers understand and communicate the most sustainable options. When it comes to sustainability in travel, it can be difficult for travelers and agents to identify which flights, routes, and accommodations are the greenest. That's why Travelport empowers its agents to operate as modern retailers of sustainable travel, giving them the ability to access consistent emissions data using the Travel Impact Model. Travelport is also exploring solutions to help travel retailers offer carbon compensation and nature regeneration to their customers. My guest today is Tom Kershaw. Tom is the Chief Product and Technology Officer at Travelport. Previously, he has been the Chief Technology Officer of multiple technology companies, including being the Director of Product Management at Google previously. Tom believes not just in open source technology, as we will hear in today's interview, but also the fact that it is people who are working in technology who are responsible for ensuring a sustainable future for travel. Tom is open about his controversial views, and that's what made this conversation very interesting, and I'm sure you have as much fun listening to it as I had fun speaking with Tom. Tom, welcome to the show. It's great to be speaking with you once again. It's been a while since we met in Dubai and shared the stage, where you actually lit the stage on fire, sharing some of your very frank views on why things like offsetting doesn't work or traditional planting of trees won't work. Now, you said you're not against planting trees, but is planting trees good or bad in general? Let's get started there.
Well, I think lighting the stage on fire is not environmentally sound either. So I probably shouldn't have done that. I apologize. And I think planting trees is a great thing for if you like trees, but planting trees isn't going to solve global warming or sustainability. I mean, I think planting trees is a tool that we have. But I think a lot of the schemes around using tree plants, you know, a lot of the environmental arguments have gone into just plant a tree and everything's fixed. No, you can't spew carbon into the world and dump waste into rivers and then plant a tree and then go think that you're a good person or something. It's not the way it's going to work. So I think we have to stop using some of these things as excuses and start holding ourselves accountable for the actions we take every day and think about those actions and see, you know, are they worth it? Or can we be doing it better? Can we be contributing to making the world a more sustainable place for future generations without, you know, cutting off our arms? You know, it's easy to say, well, I have a way to make the world sustainable to stop eating. Well, that's probably not super smart because you kind of need to do that. So I think balanced, rational conversations about pluses and minuses is what the world needs.
Right. Well, hey, you can't stop eating, but you can choose to become a vegan if you would like, and that helps.
Correct. And you can eat and plant more sustainably and more consciously and understand where your food is coming from, not just blindly do it. So I think, you know, one extreme is to ignore the consequences of what we as a species are doing. Another is to just, you know, do nothing because you're so obsessed with these things. So I think we have to take the things that make us human, make the human experience so great, and make sure those are preserved, but in a way that doesn't harm the environment the way we have been historically.
You know, the interesting thing is we will get into, of course, airlines and how airlines are currently tackling climate change and how travel is. I remember the first time I actually offset my travel was on this Swiss flight to London. And it gave me the option, I think it was using Compensaid. And it said, you know, let's plant trees. And I immediately felt so good that I had planted trees and, you know, I was flying scot-free. But I had this feeling at the end that, you know what, this feels like a get out of jail card in Monopoly. Do you feel that's the case? You know, offsetting, is it like get out of jail card when it comes to travel?
Yeah, I think get out of jail free is a good way of putting it because nothing's free. I think that it's important that we do what we can to offset or remove damage that we're doing to the environment. But the best way to solve that problem is to stop doing the damage. And it doesn't mean stop traveling. It doesn't mean sit at home in the dark crying. It means getting out and doing things and helping the world get to a sustainable place. I mean, you can look at any of the environmental solutions, even something simple like electric cars. 10 years ago, there's 1,000 people saying, that's impossible. It'll never work and blah, 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 blah. And when you first started doing them, they were very expensive. What made them sustainable and what made them scalable is adoption and investment. And I think that is true of wind power. It's true of sustainable air fuel. It's true of everything we need to do in the airline industry is that it starts with the first step. And while it may seem like an insurmountable challenge, getting to a zero emissions place for air travel in particular, but travel in writ large, is an achievable goal if the smartest minds put their heads to doing it, and we stop lying to ourselves that we can put, you know, $9 in a jar at the airport and the world is fixed now, because it's not a thing. So nothing is easy. And this is going to take hard work, coordination, and real, you know, blood, sweat, and tears from some really, really smart people. But that's why I believe it's very much achievable.
We are talking because you're a smart person. And also, you are not necessarily in a sustainability role. You're actually the chief product and technology officer at Travelport. You have a history in your career of being chief technology officers for multiple companies. You were director of product management at Google in a previous lifetime. How is sustainability part of your portfolio at Travelport? What does it have to do with your work at all?
I think sustainability is largely a technical problem. Part of it is about measurement, prediction, and how we retail the travel experience and how we sell it. So I think the way we've been selling it and the way we've thought about it hasn't taken sustainability into account. And so I think you raise a really good point, because I think there's all kinds of chief sustainability officers or people who look entirely at sustainability, but they're not integrated to the rest of their work. They're off on the side. And that lack of integration is holding us back. I think that, you know, when you really, we'll look back on the moment where we crossed over into really making a contribution to sustainability. It's when chief revenue officer started caring, and the CEO cares, and the HR person cares, and lowly technology people like me who normally work in the basement, they don't talk externally. You know, we start caring, because I think we all have to pull together. There's a sales component, there's a marketing component, there's a technical component, there's a physical aircraft component. So all of us need to be a part of this. And I view, from Travelport's perspective, we're a software company for travel buyers and sellers, that we have to think sustainability in everything that we do. It's got to be part of our culture, part of what we believe in, in order for us to make the difference that we need to. And you'll find that a lot of things you talked about, offsets, carbon capture, which flights to take, how to promote SAF, those are all technical problems and shopping problems. So it's critical that technology officers or technology professionals really think about sustainability as part of their day-to-day job, which I do.
This is fantastic. I think it's quite refreshing, because very often, at least when I'm speaking with airline CEOs or airport CEOs, the thinking is, you know, this is the sustainability silo. This is the job of the sustainability department, to which I say, hey, since when did any company have a department of telephones? It's something everyone must do, right? And that's exactly what you're saying. As a technology professional, it is part of your job. Now, Travelport is interesting. I mean, you power business travel, you power travel agents. You are not necessarily, you know, selling flight tickets directly to me as a customer on an everyday basis, but you're powering the sites and systems that ultimately sell airline tickets to customers. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. Think about what we do is the following. We look at all the options, all the available flight itineraries, and we say, here's the one you should pick. Here's the best one. And we use a bunch of criteria to determine what the best one is. It used to be cheapest and shortest. Real simple. Like whatever's got the cheapest option, whatever is the shortest duration, we're going to put them in order and tell you which one's a pick. Why? How could it possibly be that we don't tell you the carbon emissions of that flight and let you use that as one of the search criteria? How could we not do that? So I think that's kind of how I think about it. And it's funny, you mentioned the airline CEOs. My message to them is quite simple. You should not have to do this yourself. It's not just on you. We should all be contributing to help, because the airline CEOs are the ones, they fly the physical planes, and they have a lot of work to do to get those planes to a zero emissions state. And I don't want to do it themselves. I want to help them. I want to contribute funds. I want to contribute awareness. I want to contribute technology to make it easier so that they don't feel like they're in it alone, because they're not.
So let's talk about this. Travelport is a B2B company. You work with businesses like airlines. How are you helping airlines and airline CEOs deal with the climate problem and help them become more sustainable?
Well, I think I look at it as there's four key pillars. And when I first started, I admit when I started in travel, I was like, this is easy. I mean, you know, this, how hard could it be? Turns out all four of those pillars are very complicated and wrought with difficulties. But the first one we should talk about is awareness. So how do we tell a consumer or a corporate travel manager, if it's a business traveler, here's the impact. And I have to predict ahead of time the carbon impact of this flight versus another flight. What of these two options, which one is better for the environment? Which one is approaching or allowing us to progress towards zero emissions, our zero emissions goals? So the first part is inform, explain to a consumer. Now, here's the problem. There's no standard for how you calculate what this is. And you're predicting a year, it could be a year before the flight even occurs. You're trying to predict what the emissions will be, because that's when the decision matters. When you book the ticket is when you have to take the environmental impact into account. So there's no standards. It's a predictive measure. It's not an exact measure. It's a prediction. And then lastly, and I always ask this question to myself, what exactly does 32.1 pounds of carbon even mean? I mean, I don't get it. Is that good or bad? I mean, so you got to compare it to what the alternatives are. But in the end, I think we're trying to, A, get consumers to think about environmental impact in every decision they make, whether it's to drive a car to the store, take an airplane to London, stay in a hotel, or, you know, play video games, whatever it may be. You should think about the impact. And we want to explain it to them in a way that they understand and can act about. So that's the first part is inform. And then after that, there's a bunch of other things we'll talk about in a second. But that even inform, which you thought would be easy, is actually quite complicated.
So let's talk about the complications. One of the things you just mentioned is standards. I go on three different travel search sites, and the carbon calculations, at least those that show me the carbon calculations, are all different. And then I go to the airline site. If the airline is showing me the carbon calculations, it is, you know, a fourth calculation. Who do I trust? Why are these so different for the same flight from point A to point B?
It's funny because I always say something quite controversial on this topic, which is I don't care about accuracy. And I know a lot of people are going to hear this and say, like, what do you mean? Accuracy is everything. Every day someone knocks on my door and says, I've got the most accurate predictor of carbon emissions. I take it all into account. You know, the way the sun knocks off the mirror in the lavatory and that hits against the, you know, a red carpet and adds like one, you know, micro ounce of carbon to the atmosphere. I don't necessarily care about accuracy. I care about transparency. And I think it's important that we all know how, in relative terms, what flight is better for the environment? What flight is the least carbon, has the least carbon emission associated with it? And it doesn't necessarily have to be 100% accurate. What it has to be, though, is standard. And so when I have all these folks knocking on my door trying to sell me their super accurate product, I'm like, well, how do you calculate that? And they're always like, that's my intellectual property. I'm like, well, then I don't need to talk to you because I don't need your intellectual property. I want an open source standard that's fully transparent, that you'll tell me exactly how it's calculated. I don't need magic. I don't need miracles. I don't need black boxes that work in some mysterious way. So we were adamant from the beginning. And when we first started doing this a couple of years ago, it was very unpopular to say, if it's not open source, I'm not doing it. Now, I think we've made a major step as an industry, because I think we all kind of realize that it's going to have to be open source and transparent, which is why, you know, we joined the Travelist Coalition, because it's the only work out there that publishes its methodology for all to see and all to use. And I think anything else is a non-starter.
So let's talk about Travelist. Travelport is, of course, part of Travelist. Did you join Travelist because it's open source? Was there more to it? What has this partnership yielded till date?
It's not more to it. I'm a simple person. Open source or nothing when it comes to this topic, because this is not something that we can afford to weaponize. I am not going to take my travel calculations and go fight a competitor with it. I want to use the same thing as everyone else. I want us to agree this is what we're doing. And I don't want to be quibbling over, well, this measurement versus that measurement. Oh, they use Diet Coke, not Diet Pepsi, so they're worse for the environment, whatever. I mean, so that's why we joined Travelist. It was entirely because of its open source commitments and the fact that I could actually go and see how they're, I could disagree with stuff. See, I don't like that. I don't think you should be doing seat level. I think you should be doing aircraft level. And we can have those debates and reach a consensus in the light of day for all to see. Now, as it turns out, the Travelist decision was a really good one for other reasons. I didn't necessarily bank on those other reasons, but the strength and diversity of the group in Travelist, from Google to airlines to travel agencies of all shapes and sizes to other distribution companies such as ourselves, Amadeus. It's all of those reasons. Have made Travelist the right decision. I mean, when we were first doing it, they were competing with IATA, which is an airline industry association, who also had a proprietary, non-transparent mechanism for calculating carbon. And now we've come together, and IATA and Travelist is growing. As it grows, it's going to be harder to manage, because when there's more opinions and more people at the table, I always say about open source is that it's a lot harder than proprietary, because with open source, you got to explain what you're doing. You have to listen to people's opinions. You have to document what you're doing and write it down, all the hard stuff. So it's harder to do, but to me, it's a just non-negotiable first step is to be open source. And that's what Travelist brings to the table. And the fact that we've been able to get so much momentum behind it since is just cherry on top. Yes.
This is fantastic. I'm truly delighted to hear that you have, focused on open source, focused on transparency, because transparency is the first step in building trust, not just with the end customers, but amongst airlines. And if we are to work together to become sustainable as an industry, then we can't be competing and using sustainability as a competitive advantage.
And I would add that from Travelport's perspective, this goes beyond just sustainability. This is something we believe in as a culture. So it's important for us to be transparent in all that we do, and to create a community where we can all, the tide that rises all boats, not just stab each other to death in an alley. Enough of that.
Right. No, that's very encouraging to hear. And this is something that impressed me when we first spoke in Dubai as well. Now, talk to me about Travelport Plus. I believe this is a new product you have launched. Is this live? What does it do? How does it help bring transparency into the travel decision-making process?
Travelport Plus is just our next generation travel platform. It kind of is moving away from, what I would say a manual agent-centric view of the world. We're still obviously very agent-centric, but we're trying to automate the process and give agents tools to make decisions. So our next generation platform is the basis of how we're supporting things like NDC, new distribution capabilities, as well as our next generation retail storefront. So this is what allows us to put emissions data into all of our search results. It allows us to alter our search weighting so environmentally friendly flights are higher in the search results than non-environmentally friendly. It allows us to do things like incorporate rail more effectively into the platform and allows us to offer ancillaries or post-ticketing purchases, such as a way to offset or remove carbon that has been contributed to the environment. So it allows us the tools to do it. We still have to pick the right ones. We still have to do, you know, we have to inform consumers of the benefits of those things. But Travelport Plus is just our next generation platform, and it's the platform we've chosen as the basis for our sustainability offerings, which there are many are coming.
So give me an example of one. What can your customers do today in terms of expecting some sustainability offerings? And second, what's coming down the pike?
So what we have now is sustainability ratings in every search result. So in every search result, we put the expected carbon emissions associated with that using the Travelist calculation tools. So using open source tools, we will calculate the expected emissions and put that right next to price. So you can look at the price, you can look at duration, you can look at the airlines, you can look at the connection airport, and you can look at the carbon emissions. So that is something that will be there, it's actually there now, for every traveler, so they can start to incorporate carbon emissions into their decisions on what to travel. We also have rail integration on Travelport Plus, so you can do searches for rail options or connect an air segment to a rail segment. For example, in much of Europe, this is starting to be a regulated, mandated thing, that you don't take domestic flights, that you connect, that you have a seamless interconnect between a rail option and an air option. So those are the things that are there now. The things that we're adding are a kind of a rethunk, and I think more powerful options for offset than what the industry has traditionally had, as well as the ability to alter the search results. So, you know, if you're familiar with when we do an air search, the first 10 results are on the first page. You have to scroll down to the additional results. Guess how many people scroll down? Like 8%. 92% of the people are going to pick the options in the top 10. So what we choose to display and recommend as optimal is a huge responsibility. And it not only is it a responsibility, it gives us great ability to influence decisions. So we are putting into, this will be available in Q4, we're putting in controls that allow the agent or the agency or the corporation, who, if it's a business traveler, the corporate travel manager has authority and responsibility over what that company stands for. So giving them access to search controls so they can favor low emissions flights over higher emissions flights is a tool that we're actively putting into the market. And that will have a huge impact, because corporate travel typically is going to have a more influential impact on the industry than leisure travel.
This is very interesting. So you are already showcasing the more sustainable options up top. Are you seeing customer behavior change? Are people making choices where they're taking, let's say, a more expensive non-stop flight as opposed to a cheaper two-stop flight because it's more sustainable? Are you seeing that?
Yes, to a degree, but it's very limited. And it's great you brought this point up, because I've been to so many conferences where I hear, I did a survey and 78% of people said they'll pick a more sustainable option. Well, you know what? I got a survey. It's called The Real World, and that ain't happening. I see it every day when people search on our platform and they book. And they say, yeah, I really want to do something good for the environment, but I'll take the cheapest, shortest flight. Thank you very much. Click on, they go, and not another thought. And maybe what they do at the end is they give $10 to to save the dolphins, and they feel good about themselves. That's the land we're in right now. But I don't care what a consumer says in a survey. I care about what a consumer books in the real world. And we introduced this for the first time in one of our European subsidiaries, a company called Ketz in Austria, about 4 years ago, and said, we're going to offer environmentally sustainable packages at higher prices. And what we saw is take up immediately went whoosh, and then it hit about 4% and leveled off and stayed there for 5 years. So there certainly are groups of people who care passionately about the environment the way I do, who make decisions based on environmental factors. However, most consumers don't. Most consumers, in the end, will pick the combination of money and convenience. However, there is a group that does have an impact, and that's corporate travel managers. Because corporate travel managers have ESG programs, they have corporate level plans, they have culture that they're trying to create and maintain. So if a corporate travel manager says, I'm going to set a limit on what emissions are possible or permittable. I may say I want to set a budget for the marketing department. The marketing department gets, you know, X tons per year. And if they hit that limit, I'm going to stop further travel for that department. So putting those tools in the hands of travel managers, I think, is where the impact will go from a small number to a large number. I do think that that small number that we saw 4 years ago would be higher, is higher today, because awareness is greater. And that's why I think the informed part of our strategy, putting the emissions in every search result, is critical, because it takes time to change consumer behavior. You don't just wake up and I'm a new person today and now I'm going to be all environmentally sensitive. No, you got to continuously inform them. So I think it will take time. All the surveys indicate that there's a willingness to do it, but it's going to take us a little bit longer for it before you see widespread consumer changes. You also have to, another thing I would mention is, a lot of the stuff we're offering as an industry, and I think you've seen this, is we're offering stuff that won't be available for 10 years. Like, here, give me $10 and we'll buy sustainable aviation fuel. But there's no to buy. It doesn't exist yet. Or like, oh, give me $10. I'll remove carbon from the atmosphere using a carbon removal plant that hasn't been built yet. So, I mean, I think what we have to do is, yes, we should be investing in the future, but we also need to build credibility by doing stuff now. And there are things we can do today that we absolutely have to.
You know, you touched upon something I feel passionately about. It is the dissonance that travel, specifically airlines, have when it comes to delivering their promises. And simple example, if I book an Uber Green using the Uber app, a Tesla Model 3 shows up and I'm driven fully electric to my destination. That's their promise, and they deliver it within 5 minutes. I have recently moved to London and I saw a bus which said, this bus runs on hydrogen. Guess what? If I board that bus, I'm actually being driven on hydrogen fuel cells. It works. You're absolutely right. If I have now recently offset my last flight using the SAF option, and I was not told not only whether there'll be any SAF on my flight, but when the airline will have SAF. To be honest, I felt a bit cheated by the end of it, that, you know what, I've paid quite a bit more than just planting trees, and I'm not really sure if you, the airline, are going to honor your word. And, you know, that's something I'm personally grappling with.
Yeah, it's a struggle, because we haven't built the technologies that we're counting on. And you know, I always kind of joke that the industry we're going to be carbon neutral by 2040, and all the people making that commitment will be retired by 2040. So it's great that you're making these commitments on behalf of the people who are going to take your place. But yeah, that's the same as handing a burning planet to tomorrow's youth. It's not okay to do either of these things. So we have to look at what we can do today. And I do think that we're going to have to invest today in having SAFs 10 years from now. But right now, and I won't name the airline, but there was an airline who made a big public statement a few months ago, like, we're going to fly the first intercontinental all SAF 100% air flight. Of course, I called them. I want to be on that flight. Tell me what it is, and I'm going to book it today. They're like, well, there's not going to be people on it. Like, well, then what's the point? I mean, it's. There's a lot of future selling here. And while I do believe we have to look to the future and invest in the future, there are things you can do today. For example, what do you think has the biggest, when I'm measuring today, the carbon emissions from an aircraft, what do you think has the biggest impact on what that emissions number is going to be? It's age of aircraft. That's by far the biggest. So if you are a newer aircraft, probably is made of lighter equipment with more modern configurations, and literally chew less fossil fuels than an older one. And we can inform customers of that and incent them to fly newer aircraft. And if they fly more newer aircraft, what's going to happen? Airlines will invest in more newer aircraft. This is not super complicated, yet we're not doing some of these things because we're like, man, 2070 is going to be a great year, dude. Can't wait for that, man. My grandchildren are going to love it. You know, meanwhile, here I'm going to go plug in a coal furnace and, you know, smoke a cigar. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
I like how you dramatize it, because it is indeed dramatic. Now, you mentioned that there are two categories. There is the end customer, and you're right, about 4% adoption rate, 4 to 7% is what we hear in most climate-aware economies.
I'm seeing some offset adoption rates in the double digits in a few markets. Again, I think it's, in, like you mentioned, in certain highly aware markets like Australia, you're seeing take-ups that are growing. But you're right. In general, the take-up of these things is certainly single digits.
Right. Now, let's talk about the corporate segment once. And this is extremely important to Travelport. It's an important clientele for you. And like you mentioned, there are corporate pressures. Corporates face pressure from investors, from governments to ensure that they have, you know, scope 3 emissions accounted for, of which airlines are a huge part. Are you seeing a better take up from the corporate clientele and from corporate customers when they book air travel?
I'm starting to. Here's what I am seeing. It used to be a few years ago, our corporate customers would be like, so what are you guys doing about sustainability? What's your view of SAF? And we'd answer them like in a meeting as an afterthought. Now I'm getting these RFPs, and there's not a sustainability question. There's a sustainability section of like 3 pages with all kinds of different things coming down to what are the emissions of your toilets in your headquarters, to are you using organic, goat, feces to fertilize your plants, that kind of stuff, to like, what are you doing to make air travel more sustainable? And so every corporate travel manager is starting to make decisions using this criteria. And I think that is revolutionary to me. So what they didn't have until recently was the tools to do it. We didn't have tools to give them reports. We now have those. We built free reports that we give out to our agency customers to say, here's your emissions. Here's how you stack up to your peers. Here's, here's how much ahead or behind the rest of the industry you are. So informing them is something that really wasn't possible a few years ago. Now it's table stakes. And I think now that we're giving them the tools to be able to elevate sustainable travel into their search, into the search results for their corporate, for their travelers, I think you're going to see a huge, huge impact.
I'm glad to hear this. This is sort of the left hand and right hand, right? Both of them coming together to work together.
And this is the way it's supposed to work. You're right. I mean, you've got governments offering incentives and tax breaks, we have in the US. You've got marketing departments saying, we stand for this. ESG is important to us. All of these things coming together, it's like your earliest question about technology versus sustainability. We're all sustainability officers, every single one of us. And we need to think that way.
This is really encouraging. Like I said, I'm finding this whole conversation quite uplifting. What are some of the innovations that you're seeing on the technology side and some of the technology advancements that you think will have the biggest impact in the future, in the short term and medium term future, to make travel more sustainable?
Well, I mean, a lot of the main enhancements, I'm not going to say that my software company is single-handedly changing the world. You have to look first at the emission standards. And I think SAF is a real thing. I think it's just going to take some time. I think that reconfiguring aircraft, smarter builds of aircraft to be lighter, huge impact. I think electrical aircraft, still early on, huge impact. We got to do these things. I think carbon capture or removing carbon from the atmosphere, more so than just planting trees and hoping, I think these are real technical innovations. And some of them will fail. Some of them will be too expensive initially. Like if you look at carbon capture, for example, which is what we're doing instead of offset, we want to remove carbon. You give me, you want to pay for a removal, we'll remove the carbon from the atmosphere. The problem is for $50 US, you're going to offset 2% of your travel. That's not really a compelling thing. Like, I'll tell you what, give me $50 and we'll take 2% of what you just did away. That's not compelling to the user. So I think, I think we have to continue to invest in these future things. These are the most technical, to me, the most important technical innovations are SAFs, carbon capture, and new aircraft configurations using different fuel types, non-carbon emitting fuel types. That's the most important. But what we're doing, which may seem tiny to the world, is we're using search and the internet to inform customers of the impact. We're providing search results that take that environmental impact into account. We're making the air, rail, hotel, car, transfer stuff seamless. Because a lot of what's happening, because the lack of integration also confuses users. So like they might say, I'm going to take an environmentally safe, I'll take the lowest emissions flight, and then I'm going to get into a gas guzzling SUV and drive an hour to my destination. Well, you just offset in the wrong way what you did. So I think providing a complete package of environmentally friendly travel, you know, these are all things we can do with data, and we can take the data. We see billions, tens of billions of searches a day. I can take this data and say, this works, this doesn't work. So helping using data to convince users to get to sustainable outcomes, these are all things we can do that I think are very innovative and very important.
That's, again, I think this is indeed the way to go. I think there's a lot, many other CTOs and technology firms can learn from this. You mentioned something earlier when we were talking about newer aircraft. Newer aircraft, of course, reduce emissions on a per person basis. But there are airlines which buy a lot of new aircraft, and even though they're per seat emissions are down because they are growing so fast, their overall emissions are up because they are, you know, filling three planes per day as opposed to just one plane per day. How do we balance growth within aviation? Aviation expects to double the number of flights, I think, by 2045 from what it is today, and the need to cut down emissions. Do you think we can actually realistically cut down emissions without demand management, which is a scary word for a lot of airline executives?
I think we can. I think that, you know, I have an opinion, which people can feel free to disagree with, that travel is existential, that interacting with human beings gives us empathy, gives us understanding, makes us better as a species. And we couldn't do what we're doing if we didn't communicate with each other, understanding cultural differences and all the things that matter. And I would argue that seeing your family, the world has distributed all over the place, and I think seeing your family is part of the human experience. It's not a discretionary thing in my mind. So I think that if you believe that travel is existential the way I do, then, you know, it comes down to how can we do it in a reasonable way. So we should be thinking about the per person or per traveler impact and the per airplane impact. And because an airline is growing, doesn't mean that they could be replacing a form of travel that was less sustainable because they're doing it in a more effective way. So I think we have to be looking at this on a unit basis and not on an aggregate basis. And that's why you get a lot of misleading statements like, oh, this airline is doubled their emissions in the last 2 years. It's because they're servicing 10 times as many people. And that the positive impact of the latter more than outweighs that of the former. I am certainly not saying the solution to this problem is everyone sit at home in the dark. It's not the solution.
Travel, I'll be the first to admit, does make the world smaller. I'm a product. I'm a living example of travel. Having been born in India, I grew up in Singapore, and I've lived in, you know, five or six countries since then, including just a few weeks in my latest home here in London, UK. Finally, you have, of course, been with a number of independent technology companies. What role do you think governments and regulators should play in promoting sustainable practices in the industry? And do you think a calculator or the technology that you are developing has a place in these large multilateral organizations like governments?
I tend to think that by the time governments solve problems, it's usually too late. And that grassroots movements of people who really care are the ones that drive those changes. Governments typically react to those early adopters who are passionate and care about things. And so we all have to be passionate and outspoken in what we're doing in order to get governments to act. I believe where the government has the biggest role here is not regulation, it's promotion. It's dealing with the fact there's investment barriers. You've got to get to scale on sustainable air fuel for it to be a viable option. And no individual for-profit company has that kind of 10-year view of the world. So the government has to help subsidize and kickstart these programs and incent behavior. I don't think it's the role of the government to say, you can't do this or you shouldn't do that or place taxation or regulation on industries like this. So, you know, you get into, you know, this becomes a political conversation in some ways, which I'm not a big fan of, but I think the government does have a role, but the real change happens with me and you and all the other people that are in this industry every day. And when those of us in travel make environmental impact a key part of our daily jobs, that's what's going to change the world, not some government sitting in some ivory tower, you know, throwing dictums out the window.
The interesting thing is, coming from a technology background myself, used to be a very strong believer, and I was in this camp. But of late, I've started to see the impact of government policy. For example, in Europe, there are very strong mandates around sustainable aviation fuels, and we are seeing airlines invest in SAF startups. We are seeing airlines invest in buying SAF quantities. In the US, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, California is the cheapest place in the world to buy sustainable aviation fuel, so much so that 80% of global SAF supply is in California right now. Both of these phenomena are being driven by the government. Yes, airlines are playing along, but I see almost a dichotomy here where Europe and North America are leading in terms of SAF and, let's say, hydrogen because of mandates and incentives, whereas the rest of the world is lagging because, hey, there are no such mandate pressures in a place like India, or there are no such incentives to make SAF plants in Australia, then what do we do?
Yeah, I think this is a chicken egg problem that we don't necessarily ever have to agree on. Is the government taking a leading position in Europe because they just decided they're going to do that, or is it because they had pressure from interest groups of citizens who really cared? So what came first, the concerned citizenry that made an issue of this and just starting to push that point of view, or the start in the government? It doesn't matter which one to me, and I don't necessarily want to take credit for or blame governments. Governments are important players in this whole ecosystem. So it doesn't matter who did it first. The matter is we're both doing it. It takes government action. It takes citizen action. It takes companies leaning in. It takes being informed. It takes podcasts like this. It's every little thing coming together. And if you remove one of those things from the equation, you just made it harder for everybody else. So I think governments are, I'm not trying to imply governments are horrendous, rotten things that don't help. They certainly do help. But I take a little credit for us noisemakers that we also deserve a little bit of credit for what's going on.
No, absolutely. I remember Dirk Singer, who's my partner in crime and in Simplifying here and leads all our sustainability research. He likes to say, you know, where there's public pressure, the government reacts and the government puts policy in. So it has to start somewhere. Putting back your CTO hat on, if you look into the future, 3 to 5 years from now, what will make you look back and say, you know what, I'm extremely proud of these one or two or three successes that I've had in making travel more sustainable? What would be, you know, your three biggest wishes if they were to come true 3 to 5 years from now?
Number one, we all had a standard interpretation of what sustainable travel means. We all agreed that this is an acceptable thing that is important, and this is something we shouldn't do. We should not be taking a flight that emits more than this amount of carbon. We should not be using this type of transportation if it emits more than this carbon. So we have an agreed standard that we're all practicing and singing to. That's one. Number two is that corporate travel managers have the tools to do what they want. They all have expressed a strong desire to improve their ESG scores and to contribute as a company, to change their culture to be one of the earth first. And we're not giving them the tools to do those things. So I would like to, 5 years from now, have corporate travel managers saying, look, I checked this button to remove emissions above this level from my search results. I'm actually using these tools. Well, that would be number two. Number three is that we would have a material improvement in the age of aircraft in our skies, that we would be able to look and say, look, the average age of aircraft was 7 years and now it's 4. And that's because of what you guys have done. Like, those are all things that happen now. And when you ask that question, I really like the question, because it's like, what does success look like 4 years from now? Not the question I get at most of these conferences is, what does success look like in 2080? Like, I don't know. Why don't you ask my tombstone? It's ridiculous.
All right. I'm glad that we're thinking realistic terms here, not 2050, not 2040. And I'm really good. In fact, JetBlue is one of the airlines we are featuring in our upcoming book, also called Sustainability in the Air. And one of the reasons we're featuring JetBlue is because they actually have a 2040 net zero target, which is ahead of most of the airlines, and they're working very hard to get there. So it's very interesting, you know, people working on shorter time horizons than most others and what they're doing. Tom, this was very interesting and very fascinating. I learned so much and totally enjoyed our chat. The final part of this interview is one which sometimes may make some people uncomfortable, but we call it the rapid fire round, and we get to know you a bit more personally. So I'll start with something very simple. What's your favorite airline?
My favorite, the airline I fly most is Delta. I have a Delta frequent flyer relationship that goes back decades. But since this is a sustainability podcast, I do have to shout out United Airlines and what they've done in the sustainability front. I think they've been leaders in this area, and I respect, very much respect what they've done, as many other airlines have done. But personally, yeah, I'm Delta card.
Yep, fantastic. What's your favorite book?
My favorite book, well, there's lots of books I used to read when I was a kid, like Watership Down, about like rabbit murder and stuff. But I'll point to a book called The World Without Us. It was written, I think, about 10 years ago by this guy, Alan Weisman. And it's basically what happens when humans disappear. And what you find is the Earth is very regenerative. The Earth has ways to come back against almost insurmountable things. And I think that book is quite powerful in kind of explaining the fact that, you know, the Earth will do just fine if we just give it the tools to do so.
In fact, that answer makes me think that all of this fight for climate change is actually to protect our species, not necessarily the planet Earth. The planet Earth will take care of itself. It's about ours.
The planet can be quite hostile to humans, rightly so.
Indeed. What's your favorite city, Tom?
Well, Los Angeles is the greatest city in the world. It's where I currently live. So certainly LA has got to be up there. But for travel, I love Tokyo. I love San Diego, Chile. I love London. I love Hamburg.
Okay. Wow. Fantastic. That's quite a few. We'll stick to Los Angeles. What's your favorite movie?
LA is the best.
What's your favorite movie? And do not say it's Lost in Translation because you mentioned LA and Tokyo.
No, my favorite movie, I always say the same thing. It's Home Alone, starring the amazing Macaulay Culkin. So I love that movie when it came out. I love it now. And I love the DIY nature of protecting yourself against evil, nefarious criminals with rakes and stuff like that. It's awesome.
Fantastic. Who is someone you would like to be stuck in the middle seat on an 18-hour flight?
Who is someone? I love talking to people, so almost anyone would be good. You know, I think of someone stuck next to a seat. I think of that movie, the Up in the Air, the George Clooney movie. And like in that movie, like the reward you get for being the biggest frequent flyer in history is you get to sit next to Sam Elliott. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I would love. I think my reward for traveling the way I've traveled, if I could spend, you know, an hour with Sam Elliott, that'd be awesome.
Fantastic. I'm glad to know. I'm glad to hear. What is something you want to learn, Tom?
Oh, I always want to learn something new. I'm new to travel. I just learned. I'm still have probably five more years before I halfway know the beginning of how travel works. So, when I know everything, it's, you know, which has never happened, but I don't want to know too much. I want to always be learning and challenged. And whenever you feel like you're the dumbest person in the room, you make the most progress. So I'll learn. I like learning all the time.
Fantastic. I actually had one of these moments quite recently. After 15 years in the industry, I actually chaired a conference in Amsterdam on sustainable aviation fuels. It was my first ever fuel-related conference. And I walked in there and I was being just as much of a sponge as I was trying to lead some of those sessions because there was so much to learn. And I had met barely five of the 500 people in the room in the last 15 years. So that was not too long ago, and I can totally relate to this feeling.
Yeah, it's totally true. Just the other day, I got a lecture on how carbon removal, carbon capture works. And I was like, I had no idea that's what you're doing. Wow, that's fascinating. So every day, there's something that you stumble across that you're like, I had no idea that that works that way. So it's super cool.
There you go. Who do you look up to?
Who do I look up to? I look up to everyone in our industry who is trying to change things and who is trying to be trying to embrace change, not preserve the past. I think there's politicians who are doing that. I think there's writers and artists. I am a big believer in art and theater, in ballet, in music. And you know, I think the people who have influenced me the most, it's usually an artist or a singer more so than a politician or a businessman. artists are cool. Business people are like us.
Did you grow up practicing some sort of art, Tom? Or do you currently play or do something artsy?
Well, yeah, I'm too busy worried about how airlines work right now than to do that. But I still see music all the time, and I'm a big believer that that art is just one of the things that really changes the world.
Fantastic. The interesting thing is I recently had a guest who's the chief sustainability officer of Swissport, who was previously the CFO at Swissport. And before that, she was a professional ballerina.
Oh. Now, that's hard work. Being a ballerina is hard. Being an engineer is super easy.
Final question, Tom, for you. What is the best advice you have received?
I'll paraphrase the way my dad put it, and I'll say what it means. My dad always said, never play the inside straight. That's a poker reference. But what it meant was, it may look attractive because it's something that the math tells you it's not real. So the best advice is pay attention to the math. Look at the data. Don't make gut decisions on what looks attractive because there's a king and a jack in the same hand. Think about what you're doing and let data drive what your decisions are.
Fantastic. Data-driven decisions it shall be. Tom, it has been a pleasure speaking with you once again. Thank you. Thank you to Travelport for supporting this podcast as well, for coming on as a partner. I truly am positively encouraged to hear your commitment to open source, your commitment to informing and impacting travel decisions. And I truly do wish that you achieve every single one of your goals in the next 4 years.
Great. Well, thanks so much. And thanks for having us on the show. And thanks for doing what you're doing, because I think you're having a huge impact around informing people what's going on in the travel industry. And everyone who matters in travel sustainability listens to what you're doing. So you've really done great stuff.
Thank you. To be very honest, I do this because I learn, and I have these questions myself, and I hope some other people do as well. So this is just as much fun for me as it's for anyone listening. Thanks once again, Tom. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air. Aviation is one of the hardest to decarbonize industries, yet there are multiple paths to get to net zero. Awareness is key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing this episode on your network, on LinkedIn, Twitter, or even WhatsApp. Or perhaps you might consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this episode. You can start a conversation with us by writing to us at podcast@simplifying.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website green.simplifying.com and join the movement. Sustainability in the Air is an original podcast by Simplifying. The show is produced by Juraj Toth in Slovakia. Dirk Singer is our director of sustainability, who leads research for each interviewee out of Greenwich, UK. Shubhadeep Pal is our supervising editor based out of Mumbai and Singapore. The articles are written by Ayushi Badola in Dehradun in India and Mira Hull in Montreal, Quebec. Creative design is led by Ligia Esteve in Montreal. Baiba Dreamen is the project director for the show based out of Valencia, Spain. Special thanks to Wendy Sim in Singapore. And I'm Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simplifying and your host. Please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.